Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. And let's be honest, right now I'm a bit of a mess. I'm wearing a $12 elastic waist, black cotton capris, and an $8 black cotton t-shirt. And yeah, I'm barefoot. When I have an important Zoom meeting, all I do is put on a blazer. Now, personally, I see this as a win. My ability to talk with y'all each day while looking like this is a reason radio is so much better than TV. But this is not how everyone has responded to the social isolation of quarantine. I have one friend, Janice Johnson Diaz, who stays on IG looking like quarantine has been her personal spa vacation. Like me, Janice is a professor, spouse, and mom in her 45 pluses. This year, she released her first book and completed a virtual book tour, and she looks amazing. So I asked her about it, and here's what she said.
I am determined for the people not to take any more from me. So the least I can do is make sure that I get myself all the way together in the middle of this pandemic. I'm gonna wear that clothes. I'm gonna master the lashes. I am gonna figure out how to contour. I'm gonna get into it. Each day I'm out here trying to figure out how I'm gonna be Zoom fly, or how, when I come out to see the people in their small groups and my mask, how I'm gonna be fly without lipstick. So it's a thing when you're 49 plus. You have to remember the good old days, that there is still a little flyness in you, even in the midst of this craziness that is America.
So I've been thinking, just what are the new standards of grooming, beauty, and fashion? Are we facing a season of MHP Frump or an era of Janice Johnson Diaz fly? Joining me now is Darian Simone Harvent, a reporter covering beauty at the intersection of politics and pop culture. She also writes the newsletter Beauty IRL. Darian, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation.
What happened, even with our definition of beauty, over the course of the past year and a half of the pandemic?
Ooh, yes. If wellness, self-care was already not a part of the beauty conversation, it now is the dominating conversation. I think that a lot of times when kind of thinking about this from the perspective of not the industry, but more of, you know, a consumer, for lack of a better word, just as a person, the person walking down the Target aisle, something for the past year we have not been able to do at the leisure that we may want to. I think that now the definition of beauty has broadened to also question how we are taking care of ourselves. And so I think that as we saw a decrease in certain sectors of beauty, beauty is a resilient industry. You know, revenue and in the monetary value in comparison to whether it be groceries or fashion or personal care products, I think that out of all of them, you know, beauty is the most resilient. And so as much as we saw maybe a hit within maybe a makeup or a decrease in lipstick sales, we also saw an increase in personal care products now being viewed as a part of our beauty regimen, from our body oils to our body lotions to also DIY, thinking about press-on nails and doing your own gel, your gel manicures, things like that became popular. And so I think it has almost been a more of a looking yourself in the mirror. And I also think that a lot of people who thought that they didn't care as much about that hair color or that haircut realize that they do. And it affects the way that they look at themselves, you know, whether it's on Zoom or in real life now.
So let's talk a little bit about what we're buying, because it did feel like a weird year. So I heard you talk about lipstick. So on one hand, like when you're out in public, you were masked during the winter months, right? You also had a hat down. So it wasn't as though people out in the world could see you. But on the other hand, Zoom was really intimate, right? People all up in your pores and your eyebrows. So talk to me about what parts of, for example, our face or of our hands, maybe we got more focused on this year.
Yes. Oh, there are, this conversation is so nuanced and so personal, but there are definitely some trends that we saw as our collective lifestyles change, particularly around work, this environment where we did feel that we had to show up in a certain way between January 2020 and mid-March. So this is during the mid-March was essentially when most states within the U.S. went on lockdown. Zoom usage jumped 67%. And so that directly affected the way that literally people viewed their faces and how that is different from the mirror. It's different from even your phone. And it made people really think about getting procedures done, whether it is something around maybe that takes more of a healing time and is more invasive, such as like a nose job, or maybe it's something around Botox. You know, now I think that within the world of plastic surgery, we are seeing that also there are these regimens or these services that you can do that's not quite Botox or it's not quite a lift. It's something that may be temporary. And so we saw an increase of people exploring those options and really kind of basically asking the question, do I look the way I think I looked?
No, it's true. Typically, if you are speaking to a group of people, you're not also looking at a reflection of yourself as you're having that conversation. It's very disconcerting in a way. It makes it harder to forget what you look like and just be in your head because there you are staring at yourself while you're talking. I'm wondering if we know anything about that connection, the kind of Zoom impact of looking at yourself while you're, you know, trying to work, and what that's meant for the other part of our beauty, our bodies, mm-hmm. right? Are we carrying the stress in our bodies? Are we putting on weight? Are we taking off weight?
I wrote a piece for Allure, and I was able just to talk to a variety of women and femmes across ages, right? And I think that something that I did feel was a common thread, all of us were looking ourselves in the mirror longer or on Zoom, and our reactions were different. I spoke to a woman who she routinely got her hair colored because of the grays. Now, you know, she kind of realized like, hey, this is who I am. I'm going to continue to wear my gray and to rock it. And I think that actually all of those things are still connected to beauty and taking care of yourself, even mentally. And kind of, we feel that and are sometimes required by society to look a certain way. And so I think that within that respect, people have new perspectives that I think are attached to wellness. And so maybe as we saw a decrease in hair coloring is an increase in hair care. So people are just looking to take care of their hair more from the inside out. We also saw an increase in sales of body washes, soaps and lotion. And this is all according to McKinsey in a recent report that they came out with on how COVID is changing the world of beauty. I do think that the beauty industry has worked to address these sentiments. Yeah, some people are looking in the mirror and saying, hey, I want to get this procedure done. And other people are like, you know what, I'm going to grow out my gray hair. And because I'm focusing on my skincare now more, you know, I haven't bought that hair color yet. I'm not going back to the hair salon as often as I did.
So obviously the pandemic marked so much of what this year was, but another critical aspect over the course of the past year has been the movement for racial justice. How has that shown up in our beauty standards and our beauty purchasing?
The death of George Floyd, the awareness of the death of Breonna Taylor, really in conjunction with us being during this time where people really had to sit with this idea of not always centering themselves and their problems every day, really allowed people to take the idea and the responsibility that they feel that brands have to being ethical to a whole new level. I think that people were already looking for brands to be transparent, but it was more around ingredients and it was more around what I'm putting on my skin. And now I think that people want to know who the founder is. They want to know what you believe in. They want to see that you support people of color in some way. They want to know the racial makeup of your corporate office. And so all of these things now people feel are how brands now need to compensate for how they have attributed to systemic racism. And so I think that where people are at now is that people are essentially trying to figure out the role that brands are supposed to be playing in social justice and in improving the world. And that is something that I don't even think I have the answer to either. You know, I think that we kind of look to brands as being the voices, but I don't think that they're actually equipped to be our voices.
So we had a conversation on the show earlier this week about TikTok and TikTok dance creators and the strike relative to white TikTokers using the creative production of Black creators. And I've been thinking about this relative to beauty as well, and the ways that Black women's aesthetic might get picked up by folks outside of community. Could this be a problematic side of the movement for social justice when we see an appropriation of beauty norms and standards?
Oh, that's an interesting question, because I think I'm kind of thinking about the world of natural beauty and clean beauty, and how when you look at the, I think, both indigenous practices, but also the practices of people of color, and how we have sourced our beauty. I think that there are some ingredients or rituals or now even plants that are becoming popular now, because that have been popular already amongst Black folks now. And so I think that what we're ultimately probably going to start to now see more is more of that. And it actually makes me always think about this moment, and we're kind of, again, tying it back to pop culture, appropriation. I think back to Zendaya, who remember when she wore dreadlocks or faux locks to the Oscars. I'm blanking on which year it was, but Juliana Rancic was a host on E! And also a part of Fashion Police. She talked about how it looked like she smelled of weed and patchouli oil. And do you remember that this happened?
I think I blocked that out.
Yes. And weed and patchouli oil, I think she may have said cannabis and patchouli oil, but essentially the point was that it looked like she was carrying this vibe, or she looked Rastafarian, or she was, you know, from the earth. And now we're starting to see, you know, a continuation of, we love coconut oil. We love a shea butter now. Patchouli is now a popular fragrance ingredient, and really always has been. So I think that, again, there are a lot of very, very interesting ties. And when we look at kind of tying it back to TikTok some, and looking at, you know, Black creators being on strike, so much of it is about dance, but a lot of it is about aesthetic too, and how you are able to use voices to own a persona or to own a look. And I think that we have a lot of people right now who are doing that just for, and thinking it's just for fun, and other people who are saying, hold up now, you know, it feels like you're taking some of my identity, and I want to know why you have a million views for it.
Now, last question. I just want to tie this back to politics a little. There are some pop culture icons who are always looking to for beauty tips, but I'm wondering if there are political ones. I know you've written about the Michelle Obama bounce, but I'm wondering if we are seeing that, for example, with VP Harris, or if there are other people in the political realm marking what is beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. I think that it is often done in these very subtle ways. And so I think that I kind of look at someone like VP, Kamala Harris, who she has ultimately worn the same hairstyle for years. I think that we've seen these throwback photos of her in, you know, the 80s or the 90s, where maybe she had a shorter cut or a different color or whatever it may be. But now we very much associate her hair, I think, with just her image and who she is. And it's funny because I was just watching this TikTok, and it was basically this girl talking about Kamala Harris' hair. And I think that there's still such a beauty in like a consistency. Like, she clearly has, you can tell she's been wearing her hair like this for a long time, because she knows how to take care of it, or she knows how it'll look. It's kind of her fail-proof look. So I think it will be interesting if and when she ever makes these changes, and to see how people react, because a lot of times it's normally, I think that a lot of the beauty practices that are done within the political realm often end up being practical ones. I think also somebody like AOC, who actually really does and has talked about the power of beauty and how the way that she decides to present herself, especially in the political realm, I think is about symbolism and resistance to some degree. I think we've seen it both in their fashion when certain members decide to wear white, but also AOC, she has a red lipstick that she's known for. I also think about people like Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, who decided to to just go bald and to no longer wear wigs or extensions because she has alopecia. That is a beauty choice, especially within this realm where Black women's looks are policed not only in the workplace, but also just out in society, you know? And so I think that those are probably the main people who I am always paying attention to. And I also think it's really interesting to also think about politicians who either identify as non-binary and trans. And I think that particularly makeup and beauty has been an armor for them to, as a way to always express themselves, not just in politics, but I think it's particularly interesting in politics in this world where it is about suits and you know, not being too crazy with your hair or whatever it may be. I also think Nicole Hannah Jones, author, investigative reporter, leader of the 1619 Project, who has continuously wear bright red hair in this world of a world that we come from. And we know that bright red hair is not the norm. And sometimes people question how serious you are or literally how good at your job you are if you have a hair color that may not seem like that, that is more vibrant. And so there are these choices that we do make here and there.
I love that you brought us to Nicole Hannah Jones, and I adore that you brought us Tyana Presley, because she is what gave me the courage to shave my head. But turns out my head isn't shaped nearly as beautifully as Rep Presley's. Darian Simone Harvin is a reporter covering beauty at the intersection of politics and pop culture. She also writes the newsletter Beauty IRL. Darian, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.